I'm Illinois Issues Editor Jamie Dunn. As summer legislative session drags on, it may seem like not much is getting done. But this week, Illinois Issues columnist Charlie Wheeler looks at what lawmakers did accomplish during the spring session. I sat down with Charlie to talk about his column. A lot of the focus has been on the fact that the Democratic leadership and Governor Rauner can't seem to agree on anything, but lawmakers did pass quite a few substantial pieces of legislation during the spring session. That's what your column is about. Can you just give us a rundown on what the legislature got done?
A lot of the spotlight has been focused on the harsh rhetoric and the total lack of civility among the two parties, the Republicans and the Democrats. And it's like every other comment from the governor's spokespeople is about what a bad guy Mike Madigan is. And the response from the Democrats is along the lines that Republicans don't want to cooperate. All they want to do is bust the unions. And so a casual observer might think that the General Assembly is in pitched battle and there's sort of like a demilitarized zone down the center aisle of the House and the Senate. But in reality, on a lot of stuff, lawmakers were able to sit down on issues that were divisive, issues that people have argued about for many years with very strong opinions, very sincerely held, and they were able to find compromise. And so for my column, I thought it would be good to point out that it's not as bad as you might think at a casual glance in terms of the hostility in the General Assembly. And so I chose in particular the criminal justice area, both because that's something that the governor has been interested in from his inauguration in the State of the State, wanting to do something to deal with the state's massive prison population, and the calls on the national level, including from President Obama, for some kind of reform in our criminal justice system. To their credit, the legislature, Republicans and Democrats, and the parties involved, both from the law enforcement side and from the side of people interested in civil rights, community policing, those kinds of issues, were able to sit down, hammer out a far-reaching bill that some people have suggested may be a model for the nation. One of the major features of the bill has to do with authorizing the use of body cameras. It's a 174-page bill. Some two dozen of those pages deal specifically with the issue of body cameras, spelling out how they're to be used, spelling out the conditions under which they can be turned off, even providing a source of funding to help local police departments acquire this equipment. It's not mandated. No one has to do it. But if they do, they're going to have to follow these standards and protocols that are going to be developed under the guidelines in the legislation by the police training board, the state agency that sets up the training requirements for law enforcement, police, sheriff's deputies, and so on, all across the state. It also requires intensive training, both once every 3 years and annually for police officers, on topics like the constitutional use of authority, procedural justice, civil rights, human rights, cultural competency. And the advocates say these provisions will better prepare police officers to deal with situations in which the supposed offender has a mental illness or has some other kind of emotional stress going on. And they'll also make police officers more sensitive to cultural issues. So it's trying to sensitize police officers. The legislation also would require a database to be maintained of police officers who've been disciplined, who've been fired, or who've resigned under pressure. And it would be accessible to the police departments across the state. And it's seen as a way to identify officers who've been problematic and, I suppose, prevent me as the city council in one town hiring some police officer who's got a bad track record that I wasn't aware of.
And folks may not realize, but these kinds of bills that deal with policing are very difficult to hammer out. Thinking of the, you know, eavesdropping legislation about whether or not folks could record in public, thinking of the use of drones in law enforcement. I think that bill took a couple years to achieve. So what goes into negotiations like this and how were folks able to pull this off fairly quickly?
I think it begins with a recognition on all sides that this is a problem that needs to be addressed. And I may have my strong opinions, you may have your strong opinions, but neither of us possesses 100% of the truth. And we're going to need to sit down and hash these things out and reach some sort of a compromise. And I found it particularly interesting that a statement of support came out for this body camera legislation from the Illinois NAACP and the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, in which they endorsed it. And the key paragraph to me, they say they're pleased to see this initiative advance in the General Assembly, and they believe it is significant that their two organizations are making this statement of support together. And I'll quote, "We're committed to seeking and demanding transparency and accountability in law enforcement. Body cameras will help show the public that most police officers are engaged in constitutional policing, and they will help identify officers who abuse their authority or commit misconduct." On the one hand, you have the NAACP, which for a century has looked out for the rights of minorities, very strong advocate of civil rights. On the other hand, you have chiefs of police who are very concerned about maintaining order and security and safety for citizens in their neighborhoods. So they were able to sit down and see these body cameras as a way to both protect police as they carry out their duties and also allow the community some sense of protection, if you will, from rogue police officers.
And then I just wanted to touch on a few of the other bills that made it through the General Assembly. There were some pretty substantial changes made to the state's juvenile justice system. Can you tell us a little bit about those? Or proposed. They, of course, have not been acted on by the governor
yet.
Yeah,
all of this legislation that I mentioned in my column, and I checked right before doing this interview, it is still on the governor's desk. Now, it was sent to him in late June, and under the Constitution, he has 60 days to act on it. So I suppose if he wanted to, he could wait until the tail end of August to decide what to do on all of these bills. One key one would prohibit youths who are charged with misdemeanors from being sent to state juvenile prisons. And the argument on behalf of the advocates is that you take a kid who's charged with a relatively petty offense and you send him to, in essence, graduate school for criminal behavior, because unfortunately, both at the juvenile level and at the adult level, our correction system, mostly for lack of funding, doesn't really rehabilitate people. And instead, we have kind of a revolving door. And the notion behind this particular legislation is that if we were to keep these kids out of the juvenile prisons, give them rehabilitation services in their own communities, we'd be better off. And there's another one that would require a judge to review before minors are automatically transferred to adult court for crimes that don't involve physical harm to an individual. Currently, if they're charged with certain crimes by law, they're transferred automatically to adult court. And the argument, again, is that they have the potential to be rehabilitated, but they need to be judged on a case-by-case basis, and that should be the job of a juvenile court judge.
So looking at these pretty substantial pieces of legislation that were approved in the spring session, what do you think lawmakers can kind of take as a lesson from getting these things done and potentially apply to the impasse that is going on right now when it comes to budget and the governor's agenda?
What I would hope is that when people look at this legislation and consider the compromises that were reached to make it possible for the bills to be sent to the governor's desk, and by lopsided margins, I mean, several of these bills had no opposition. They passed, you know, like 115-0, that people will realize, even though I may be a Republican, you may be a Democrat, we were still sent here by our constituents to address the state's serious problems, and that is over and above the partisan bickering that seems to be the hallmark so far of our budget decisions. There's room for compromise on this stuff. And if you look back historically, particularly on controversial issues, whenever we've made progress, it hasn't been because one party or the other has been able to steamroller its way through. It's because sensible, hardworking lawmakers from both parties have decided to tackle the issue. They've educated themselves on what the real concerns are, what the public policy options are, and then they've reached a compromise on how to move the state forward.
To read Charlie Wheeler's column for Illinois Issues, go to WUIS.org. While you're there, don't forget to sign up for the Illinois Issues weekly email alert. I'm Jamie Dunn.